Well, good morning and welcome to the first day of December and to our panel discussion on that day. It is very nice to have you with us. Joining us on the panel this morning, we have a terrific assemblage. Let me tell you who they are, and then we'll get into the meat and potatoes of the morning. Joining us for the discussion, WAMC's Alan Chartok. Good morning, Alan. How are you, sir?
Hi, Joe. We missed you yesterday.
And I missed you.
And I have to say, we had a wonderful Giving Tuesday a couple of days ago, and in this atmosphere, a lot of people want to join our membership.
And you can still do that, even though you can make a Giving Thursday. What the hell?
Sure. What's the phone number?
Everybody knows 1-800-323-9262.
Oh, or WAMC.org.
Yeah.
Rosemary? Rosemary Armeo is the director of the journalism program at UAlbany, and she joins us this morning.
Yes. Any phone numbers? Inside joke that has shocked me into silence.
Not at all.
Okay. And Ira Fussville joins us. He's the publisher emeritus of the Daily Freeman, and we always love when Ira is here, and we thank you very much for being
here. Thank you very much. Nice to be back.
Very nice to have you on. Hey, let's talk about Preet Bharara. What's that about? So yesterday it was announced officially that Preet Bharara, we certainly have had a great deal of speculation on this program over... Well, I would say over the last 6 to 8 months as to the many scenarios, if Hillary Clinton had won, if Donald Trump had won, of Preet Bharara staying where he is as the attorney for this district, the federal attorney. So we've got word yesterday that he has been asked by the president-elect to stay on, and he said that he will. So, Alan, what do you make of that?
Well, let's remember that during the campaign, which everybody knew was going to be very tight, Donald Trump did the right thing. He said, I'm going to reappoint Preet Bharara. That's what he said. And he has, in fact, done that. Now, of course, Trump has a reputation of being a big liar.
No.
He lies a lot. So nobody really knew whether or not he was going to do it. And there was a discussion. Preet sat down with Trump, and they had their conversation. This has long tentacles. For example, this is not good news for Andrew Cuomo because Cuomo's friends, very close friends, are being prosecuted by Bharara. And if Bharara was going to go away, nobody really knew what was going to end up happening. So you have a Republican president, an agreement by Bharara that he would serve not only Democrats but Republican also, and he'll be there. He likes his job. I think it's good news for the people of New York State.
Do you have a term? How long is he there for now?
No, I think he's
there. Until he wants to be?
Well, no, he's there until the president. He serves at the president's pleasure.
Okay.
Chuck Schumer, who Bharara once worked for, was a fierce advocate, apparently, for keeping Bharara there. And I am sure that Trump will try to exact something from Schumer because he did what he was asked.
Well, it'll be interesting because Trump, at the same time that he made an unusual personal appeal and visited Bharara to ask him to stay on, has been assembling a band of billionaires to run the government. So it'll be interesting to see if the U.S. attorney will have any desire to continue looking into bad practices at Wall Street, because some of the kings of Wall Street are now running our government.
Very good point.
So how Machiavellian do you want to credit Trump on this? You're suggesting that the Schumer connection is one possibility.
I have no doubt about that.
Yeah, and so now – and then the Andrew Cuomo, whom you among others, have said could be an opponent for Trump in 2020. So this sort of be a preemptive strike against him. So there's just all sorts of stuff. I didn't remember that he had said he would keep Bharara, he being Trump. But Ken Lovett of the Daily News tweeted yesterday a column that he wrote in November in which Trump said just that.
Yeah.
It shouldn't have come as a big surprise, except, at least in my case, I don't believe a word this man says until he actually does something.
You mean Trump?
Yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly. So it's a tough one. But he did what he said he was going to do. I think it serves his purposes. And remember, as you just suggested, Ira, the minute that, we've seen it before. Who was it? Elliot Richardson back in Watergate days. And
Saturday Night Massacre.
Saturday Night Massacre. Presidents can, at their own free will, you know, off politically off somebody.
It's politically sensitive when they do that, though. It doesn't. It's not something they do discreetly.
Well, I don't know, Rosemary. I think
aren't all bets off here, though?
What?
Why do you say that? Because just Trump does whatever he wants.
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah.
I mean, and doesn't seem to pay the same price politically right. that other politicians
what
have in the past.
Yeah, we'll see what happens if with some other predictions. Let's say he picks Mitt Romney to be his Secretary of State. That's a big, you know, thumb wave to the alt-right and to the people who voted for him. The real question is, will he do that? I mean, I suspect he may.
Well, he said we're down to two. We have two finalists that have stayed on the island, and then I think do we wait for sweeps till we make the pick?
Is it two or is it still four? I thought we had four.
I thought he said two.
Yeah, well, he hasn't really said anything. It's just been more idle speculation, but it's been Romney, Giuliani,
Petraeus,
and was it
Corker.
Kelly?
Corker,
that's right, Senator Corker.
Well, remember, this is a guy who made his reputation by yelling on the television.
You're fired. Oh, you know, I was telling somebody last night, you can already see in the think tanks on the Democratic side, in anticipation of 2020, a raft of commercials that are going to be used against Trump in which they're going to use that phrase, you're fired. That's going to be they're going to turn that around on him.
That's interesting.
Why didn't they do that already?
Well, because he hadn't been hired.
He did. Yeah, he didn't have the
doing
job.
Firing on the government side. Yeah.
So let us talk about, I think, as we have been discussing, the various appointments and the various people who are will be making up our government over the next 4 years. I know Rosemary has said that a lot of this, the dog and pony show, has been used as a way of diverting our attention from other issues, and that is the
total conflict of interest between his business and his government service.
So now the Office of Government Ethics has informed lawyers for President-elect Donald Trump that only a divestiture of his financial stake in his sprawling real estate business will resolve ethical concerns about conflicts of interest as he assumes the office of the presidency. The revelation from the normally secretive federal agency came Wednesday in a bizarre series of oddly informal postings on its Twitter account after officials apparently concluded erroneously that Mr. Trump had committed on his own Twitter account to divesting his assets. Mm-hmm. As we discussed with your counsel, divestiture is the way to resolve these conflicts, the office wrote on Twitter, revealing legal advice that would normally be confidential and adding in a separate post, bravo, only way to resolve these conflicts of interest is to divest, good call.
Yep.
Now, this is a fairly secretive group. We don't do this kind of thing. You don't see them twittering all over the place. So what's interesting about it is somebody may be pushing.
I don't think it was an accident, in other words.
Well, and who is we? We don't think. You know, usually it's a person as opposed to a we.
What's the definition of divesting in this case?
Well,
is it include the children?
And that's the question. But in fact, even though they were praising him for that of good call, he had made no such commitment, at least publicly. So now those details are very hazy as to whether that was actually done, and no details have been provided from the Trump team other than to say that he would hold a major news conference with his adult children in 2 weeks to reveal legal documents that would remove him from what he called the business operations of his company.
See, business operation, though, is separate
Not
than business
ownership. Right.
So let's just play around with this a little bit. Let's say, for the sake of discussion, he takes his name off of every legal document. He's no longer allowed to sign checks, speak for the company, etc., and gives that all to the children. Is that sufficient? Because we know, and I'm not saying whether it is or not, but certainly he could still be doing things that would benefit his former company because his children are running it.
It's not even his former company. If he just gets out of the operation, he is still
an
shareholder. Owner. He's a shareholder.
What did Bloomberg do in New York?
Bloomberg really did have a get out.
Yeah, he left.
Get somebody else doing that and put it to a blind trust. he did it the right way.
But he could have still, recognizing that New York City is not the United States, he could still have impacted his former company on, with policies that he was advancing as mayor. No?
Well, there's a possibility. There's also a possibility that the people who were doing the blind trust knew damn well what Bloomberg would want them to do.
You know, sure. Anyway,
so. Yeah, but benefiting your former company, Cheney with Halliburton comes to mind, is different than what you have with
but
Trump.
But in 8 years, couldn't Trump get his former company back? And
well,
benefit?
I mean, yes. Bloomberg got totally out, and he came back and is now running it again. The difficulty, though, is that most of the other places are one company, or in the case of, under the Bush administration, that some of the wealthy people there had stocks, huge numbers of stocks in company. They sold it, and the government gives them a break. You don't have to pay capital gains because we're forcing you to sell. But you can't really do that with real estate. It doesn't sell right away the way stock does. As soon as you are known to be forced to sell, the price goes down. You're going to lose it. So he is at a disadvantage as far as getting out of the business. The plan I saw that I liked the best was the Constitution allows for congressional approval. So you set up a committee, an oversight committee. It would be Republicans. That's all we got in Congress apparently anymore. So they would watch over the operation and judge when there was a conflict of interest and steer away from it.
Yeah,
that
chance.
Seems fair. That actually seems fair, and I'm not sure what the problem is with it. But the interesting thing about this is that the Ethics Committee plainly has said to him, you got to divest, which we have not heard up to now.
You know, in fact, we haven't heard much from that Ethics Committee at all.
The NPR had a piece on this saying that the Ethics Committee actually sets policy. They don't really look at, say, a contract and say you've got a problem here. They don't do day-to-day law, contract law.
Yeah.
And so at first when the NPR came to them for information, they just said, well, we're going to, you know, they demurred. They didn't want to give an answer outright. Now this is a very public thing that has happened.
Well, you know, this whole thing, whatever happens with Trump and his business is going to set a precedent that would maybe 4 years ago have seemed unnecessary. But, you know, remember how we were all talking during the campaign about the potential now for more, quote unquote, private citizens to run for president.
Right.
And now this guy has done it and has won. So we might see in three, I mean, it's, I'm joking, but I'm not joking. In 3 years, Trump may run against Oprah.
Right.
Okay,
that'd be your
first woman president. But what happens to her billion-dollar brand?
Yeah.
So the point being, there may be other Trumps down the pipeline now.
Joe, can I switch subjects for just a second? We had a guy on the Capital Connection this week, J.P. Miller, who runs an aggregator, the Empire page.
Empire Report.
Empire Report, right. And he was starting to talk, and he's a little bit to the right of center. I like the guy, but he's right of center. And he's beginning to talk about the Fifth Avenue where Trump Tower is and the fact that his solution is, because we can't have people messing up Fifth Avenue where Tiffany's and everything else is, we got to put the protesters in Central Park.
We got to
put the protesters in Central Park.
He thinks the protesters are the threat
to business.
To the areas around.
I don't have a problem with it. I mean, when they had the Occupy protests, and there were some of those up here as well, and I would be driving home from the station and going past the Capitol, and they had went to the extent that there were protests, they were in a park across the street. They were not allowed to protest right in front of the Capitol.
Which the governor, by the way, wanted them arrested for, and the fighting district attorney here refused to do that, refused to prosecute them. But if you take a look at the White House, they're across the street, right, at Lafayette Park,
but
right across the street. They're
penned in effect.
But they're right in front of the White House. I'm sorry.
I'm just holding my head because the protesters are such a small part of this.
Mm-hmm.
That's easily taken care of. More importantly,
tourists.
As you've got towers all over the world.
yes.
that say Trump on it.
Yeah.
That's like a flashing light to terrorists. You know, attack here and you not only get, you know, wealthy Americans who are vacationing, which is a favorite target, but you get the president of the United States. So do we have Marines surround all these buildings?
And
now?
By the way, are they going to have to buy space in Trump Tower? We already know that's happening.
Yes, Secret
of course.
Service.
Rosemary and I were both wrong. She may not remember, but I had suggested it was going to be a big problem because all the city of New York was going to have to spend a lot of money to protect Trump outside of Trump Tower. And
right.
at the time you said, and I agreed with you, well, don't worry about it. He'll go from the White House to Mar-a-Lago.
And now
he's just the opposite. Yeah. They're saying
Well, the family wants to stay there, so they're still
right.
required
and it's
protection.
Costing upwards of $1 million a day.
Amazing.
A day.
Yeah,
a day. That's unbelievable.
Beyond all the inconvenience, by the way,
on January 21st, this is where the rubber will hit the road. On January 21st, the day after he's inaugurated, there's going to be a huge march from Herald Square. It's also the day in Washington, but a huge New York. I'll bet they get 1 million people marching from Herald Square to Trump Tower. And then what happens? And I believe they have a permit for that.
Oh, they'd have to have a permit.
Yeah. Well, I was even last night where they were lighting the Christmas tree. I mean, that mm-hmm. all comes very close to all of that, and they have to keep that whole section was shut down. Real quick, I just want to get back to the to his tweets. He was saying, while I'm not mandated to do this under the law, I feel it is visually important as president to in no way have a conflict of interest with my various businesses.
Yeah. Was visually a mistake, do you think? Was it virtually, vitally?
Well, okay, but how about the part about it's not mandated? Is it not mandated?
I've read that.
There is an interpretation of it. It's conflict of interest laws do not apply to the president right. the way they do to other people. But there's another section of the Constitution, the emoluments section, the clause,
yeah.
that specifically targets the president. So it's like everything with law. You know, that's why we have
right.
5 billion lawyers, you know, per person in
because there is
country.
Still that the well, yeah. of an elected official
exactly
and that would be of course the president of the United States right
yeah,
Steve Rattner the economist who's on Morning Joe a lot said he worked for an administration where he had to divest himself of everything as did people who worked in the administration but the president he worked for did not
yeah.
Let's take a break. When we come back, we'll continue our conversation. We have a lot more to talk about. We will include your letters as well. We welcome your letters at panel@wamc.org. panel@wamc.org. We'll be right back after this. Good morning. Welcome back to the roundtable and to our panel discussion this morning. I'm Joe Donahue, along with Alan Chartok, Rosemary Armeo, and we have Ira Fussfeld with us as well. We welcome your letters, panel@wamc.org, panel@wamc.org, and we will go to the first batch of those letters right now.
Morning.
Morning.
While Cuomo has thrown his weight into many good fights, says John from Troy, his proximity to corruption is hard to ignore. Unless Trump finds himself in his own corruption hot water during his term, I expect Cuomo to do no better than Clinton. The Democrats desperately need an outsider to run in 2020. Well, let me just start by saying there's a long way from between lip and cup here before Andrew Cuomo gets to be running on the Democratic ticket. There are things that are happening right now. For example, a series of trials of those people who are closest to Cuomo are going to come up. We'll see whether his name is in it. However, his biggest asset is his name, which is Cuomo. And in upstate New York, closer to Albany, he lost to Zephyr Teachout. In New York City and the burbs, he was saved. I don't know if it's people don't know a thing about state government or aren't following any of these corruption trials or anything like that. But so far, the Cuomo name is still magic in New York City. And go figure that out.
18 is when he's up for re-election.
That's
so
right.
That will tell a big tale as to whether he could go to be president, is how much, if at all, he wins re-election.
Well, before that, there are these, and that's why the appointment of Preet Bharara becomes so important. Because if Joe Prococo utters Cuomo's name in the same way that people uttered Bridgegate and Chris Christie's name, then it could have profound implications. In fact, you know, we don't know what's going to happen. And now that he's been, now that Bharara has been appointed by a Republican, that has interesting implications too.
About the only good thing that I can think of right this second about Trump being elected is that it has thrown everybody off kilter, and a lot of the planning that would begin even this early before the next election is sort of in a, I think, in a wait and see mode to see how and what this guy does, because I don't see a lot of names stepping forward yet.
So you're looking for any silver lining?
I was going to say that does not cut it. Up against Sarah Palin in the cabinet. Nobody's declared for 2020.
I like a lot of people, start my day thinking every time I hear Trump say something, I don't believe it. I just simply don't believe it. So how do you go into a presidency when you don't believe a word the man says?
Look, if I think Trump, unlike a lot of other people, I think Trump is a very clever fellow. And I agree with you. We have to look at and see what he does. So, for example, let's just say he decides to go along with Paul Ryan and the other guys and do away with Social Security. Dead man. He's done. I mean, politically dead. He's done. If he decides to take my Medicare away, don't touch my Medicare, he's done. I'm betting that he knows all of that, and he's not willing to do it.
Right. I mean, he's the negotiator. If in fact he's starting from that position, and I don't know that he is on either, but he'll come somewhere in the middle.
Yes. So then, do you have to go to Goldman Sachs to invest your Social Security money, which is what, of course, those guys want? Anyway, that was one letter. Am I continuing, Joe?
What do you think? Okay. Yeah, you got a whole stack.
Joe says, I'm sorry about that. Trump's tangle of conflicts could be viewed as disqualifying. Notice the date that his big announcement about conflicts plan will fall 2 days after state electors make their votes. And that's from Joe. And Mike says, I hear Sarah Palin is being considered for Secretary of Veterans Affairs. Rosemary just told you that. She should be considered for Secretary of State. After all, she can see Russia from the back porch in Wasilla, Alaska. At least Tina Fey thinks so. Laughing out loud, Mike from Glens Falls.
You know, just a moment on that. I do you remember when there after the 2000 election, and there was all this speculation as to whether Al Gore was going to run again, and will he run again? And then he appeared on Saturday Night Live, and he did a hot tub sketch. He took off his shirt and he got in a hot tub, and everybody said, oh, okay, well, obviously he's not running for president of the United States. I thought of this last weekend when I was watching Sarah Palin as a panelist on the new Match Game with Alec Baldwin, and I thought to myself, will she be in the administration? And apparently, at least, and the thing that I find also interesting, this was on our docket today, but the other thing interesting about that announcement of being considered is that basically, I don't know how much she's being considered versus she has thrown her hat into the ring and said, I want a job, right? Isn't that your reading of it?
Yeah, she's volunteered for it.
Yeah. This is the job I want. Yeah.
I think we should all remember that the day in which the secretary ran the ship is over. What happens is, even on the gubernatorial level or on the cabinet level, there's always a number two. And that number two, the keeper, has to really, in some cases, they run the whole thing and the other one is just show.
Who's your number two? No, I'm sorry.
That's funny. we have wonderful people here. But no, that's true. But in these cases, I got to tell you, Rosemary, there is always somebody who they put in to keep an eye on who's doing what.
It's like Pence for Trump. He's got a hardworking number two.
He will, and he has a definite mission. Pence will have a definite mission. But I don't think he's going to be the guy who tells Trump what he can do and what he can't do.
I think if Sarah Palin, I think she's deeply flawed. She got bored with being governor, for example. She is a face and a personality. She put on a great USO show, for example, in veterans' hospitals. It's not the worst job that he could put her in, but that's an agency that deserves a lot. Trump actually cares or has made a show of caring about veterans. So I think you may be right, Joe, that this is just let's bring her in and talk to her the same way we did with Newt Gingrich.
I suspect they're going to do it. And if they do it, look, there's no question that veterans have been maltreated in this country. They have. They have not been treated well. We all know it. And to put somebody in with limited political and intellectual skills would be a terrible thing. But I suspect he's going to do it.
Well, Joe referred to Al Gore in the hot tub, and you've got Bill Clinton in the saxophone, and you've got Donald Trump in The Apprentice. And all of this always, when I think about these things, I always think about what the best movie or the most prescient movie of the last half century, in my opinion, which was Network by Paddy Chayefsky, which you've not seen it, I urge people to see it. Mm-hmm. It's the merging of the entertainment world with the news world, and it's a farce. But guess what? It doesn't seem so farcial today as when it first was shown. So if you've never seen Network, do yourselves a favor and
find it. Is that 50 years old?
It's probably
76. So it's 40 years old.
Yeah, 40 years old.
Kelly says, I can't help but feel Trump's resistance to divestiture has to do not only with retaining the possibility of personal gains, but also wanting to stay out of prison. He's in a hard place right now because if he did fully divest his company, whoever bought it would be able to see just how cooked the books are. In other words, the Trump Foundation. And that's Kathy from Hudson.
Do you think that the Congress would have the stomach to pass legislation mandating that a president or a presidential contender release his or her tax returns?
No, certainly not.
No. We may have seen the end of that.
Yeah. Good morning, panel. Rosemary, I think visually important is exactly what was intended in Trump's tweet, an admission that perception is all that matters. Thanks and good day from Dan.
Good day.
Good day.
It could be. I raised the question because I'm not sure if it was. Yeah. He makes many mistakes in his tweets.
How is, quote, divesting into the hands of your family members worth anything? The concern for conflict of interest is valid even if family members fully own the business, right? How is this even a slight improvement? Does anyone know the actual law on this? Is it really so fuzzy? Thanks for the discussion. We did talk about this at some length today about the various provisions in the Constitution, the Emolument Clause, there'll be a lot of people. I'm not going to read this one because this guy is always just looking for trouble. My husband returned to work today. He's a lieutenant in the Fire Department of New York. I am extremely concerned for him with the added problem of Trump. Do you think New York City is safer now or more vulnerable with having to secure Trump and his family? And that's Lisa from Montgomery.
New York City has never been safer. There are so many security people, particularly in Midtown. I can't speak to the outer boroughs, but I don't think that Trump's – if people are going after Trump, there are going to be plenty of cops to take care of him.
Well, yeah, but what about the rest of us?
I mean, that's what I mean. I don't know about the outer boroughs.
Not even the outer boroughs. I mean, can you really stop anybody who puts a bomb on their back and pulls a cord in a crowd?
No, it's shocking that it hasn't happened yet. In Times Square.
Happy Rosa Parks Day, panel. Could you discuss visually important in a medium where every character counts? Why these words included in his tweet?
Yeah, I do find that phrase really, really interesting.
Why?
Is he saying it's just the perception that he's worried about?
I think it's the optics.
Okay.
That would be fewer characters if you said optics rather than visually important.
Greg says, unless Trump never seriously thought that he would win, why weren't all his conflicts of interest and potential self-dealings dealt with during the campaign and announcements to that effect made well in advance? Because he didn't want to.
Well, nobody thought he was going to win.
He didn't think he was going to win, yeah. Same with the
Russ says, as usual, dear panel, as usual, great insights and comments. That the American electorate believes so many of the statements, many of which were proven to be factually wrong or out-and-out lies, and he was elected, nonetheless remains a baffling concern to me. And that's respectfully from Russ. Hmm. Well, again, she got more votes.
So a lot more. Did you see we're up to like almost 2.4 million votes?
But I don't think a lot of people who voted for him acknowledge or know that what much of what he said was a lie. They bought into it.
Yeah.
Well, I'll go along with that, but I suspect it's not that they know, it's that they don't care. I mean, you know, the moment of truth is going to come. And I've mentioned this many times, like with my mother who used to stand, was down in Florida, and she would stand by the mailbox till the mailman came for her Social Security check. When that Social Security check doesn't come, or when they're forced to invest with Goldman Sachs, or when any of that stuff happens and changing, I think then we're going to get a new reality for a lot of people.
There are people in this country who heard his promise and his warnings to Carrier, for example, and he was going to keep jobs here rather than have them shipped to Mexico. And now he has done it to a certain degree. I think we have an argument that we can make about why he was sticking his nose into economic development in a specific state. But beyond that, the headline is Trump is saving roughly 1,000 jobs that were going to be moved elsewhere, and that is what people are going to remember. He kept that promise.
Absolutely right.
As opposed to he lied about 100 other things.
No, you're right. You're right. All right.
Including all these Goldman Sachs appointments he's making.
Our friend Polly says, the families and descendants of Warren G. Harding, Franklin Pierce, William Henry Harrison, and James Buchanan must be thrilled by Trump's presidency. Finally, their antecedents won't be the bottom of the barrel for president.
Well, I always laughed about that when he called Hillary the most corrupt person ever to run for president. It's like, nowhere close. And Grant should be on that list, Ulysses Grant. We have had corrupt people in office before. What's different about Trump is the combination of firsts here. There's huge celebrity, huge wealth, apparent wealth, and corruption. It's all there mixed together.
All right, let's take a break. When we come back, we'll continue our conversation. We welcome your letters, panel@wamc.org, panel@wamc.org. We'll be right back. Good morning. Welcome back to the roundtable and to our panel discussion. Very nice to have you with us. I know this was discussed yesterday. We've talked about it during this week. And that, of course, was the vote for House Democratic leader. And there was some question as to whether Nancy Pelosi would be chosen again. She was yesterday afternoon, but the tally does suggest deep division within the party, but she was able to defeat her challenger, Tim Ryan, to remain House Democratic leader.
Okay, let me go first on this one. I admire Nancy Pelosi, but I said repeatedly I thought it was time for her to go. We've put back in place, the Democrats have, a very old, both by age and by experience, an old team. They're all in their 70s, late 70s now, the top three people, at a time when the Democratic Party obviously needs some sort of change or boost. They have had some bad years culminating in the election. Tim Ryan simply was not up to the task. He was amazingly unimpressive, and the vote showed it. And yes, we're calling deep divisions because she won 2-1. The votes were 2-1 in her favor. Once before she's been challenged, and she had, 30 more votes that time than she does now. I'm not sure that's so deep. I think it shows that Tim Ryan simply wasn't the person who could take on the task. It's an important job to be the minority leader in a House when both parts of Congress are now controlled by the Republicans. They actually need the experience of Nancy Pelosi. I don't think it means any more than that. Everyone wants change in the party. Teresa Bourgeoisie made a good point the other day that
that's
the place
bourgeois.
For bourgeoisie, God, you can tell where I'm thinking. She made a great point that that the real change in leadership may be in the DNC, where we have to see new leadership.
Well, obviously, as a 75-year-old, I suspect you know this, I'm going to take some exception to ageism. However, I do believe, as you do, that she shouldn't have been, that she should be replaced. And there's a reason for that. That is, as I said yesterday and the day before, when the manager of the baseball team loses consistently, get another one. And you can't, but what's happened with her, of course, is that she's a beloved figure in the House itself. She takes care of her members. She makes sure that they're all with her. She knows how to count votes. She knows how to do all of that stuff, and hence her reelection. However, Rosemary, I suspect that the fact that Ryan got as many votes as he did. That takes a little bit of political courage when you vote against a sitting speaker, against a minority leader, because they hand out the goodies, and you need the goodies for your district, and that's how you get reelected.
Ellen, it could have been like a message that they knew she was going to win. She had counted the votes, but that it did signal, hey, we're doing this, but we're not happy about it.
No, because there's going to be a point at which they come up to her office, because she's going to be, you know, divvying up what little the Democrats are going to get in this Congress, and say, can I have this for my district? I need it in order to get reelected. And she may well say no. Listen, she's one tough lady.
Somebody made the point the other day, it might have been Bill Press, the commentator, who said the day before the election, when everybody thought Hillary was going to win, the discussion was, what are the Republicans going to do? They need to rebuild, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. And guess what? 24 hours later, it's the Democrats that were in disarray. No doubt about it, the Democrats have not done well in the Congress, in the Senate, in the state legislatures generally. I think I heard yesterday that there are only 11 Democratic governors. But the Democrats have done well in the White House and could, and were this close to doing it again. Your baseball analogy, normally I'd go with you on it. You have to fire the manager because you can't fire all the players. I think it's a little different in this case because all these people were elected to be there. They've elected this person to lead them, and they all have to be looking in the mirror and trying to figure out what are we doing right and what are we doing wrong. And I do think it's important, not only in the DNC, but in the Congress, that there is a different face behind the microphones when the leaders get up and talk. And I respect a lot about Pelosi and Steny Hoyer and James Clyburn, but they are, sorry, Alan, way up there in age, and we need some fresh faces because the fact is they're not going to be in Congress much longer, and we need to see the young people and the young ideas and start to rejuvenate that party and attract to more of these millennials and others who have sort of drifted away because they can't relate to them.
I don't disagree with you. I don't disagree with you. I just think that the people of a certain age have a contribution to make. Maybe that's.
I agree. I think that they become the griots, as Alex Haley said in Roots. They're the elders of the party who pass along the history.
Yeah.
Or they're the publisher emeriti, who maybe once in a while will get an email. Very rarely, fortunately, will get an email from the his or her old office asking her opinion on something.
Or inviting you to the Christmas party.
Yeah, that's right.
Have you gotten that invitation yet?
No.
Yeah. I'm sure it'll come.
But
don't worry.
With finances, they may not afford a Christmas party. So I've been there too.
let's go to a couple of other. We'll hit a topic here right before we go to our break, and that is, I do want to talk about the Supreme Court and their weighing in on deportation. Supreme Court weighs rules for jailing immigrants who are fighting deportation, facing the likelihood of a dramatically stepped up deportation process under a Donald Trump administration. The Supreme Court justices sounded closely split Wednesday over whether the government can indefinitely jail immigrants with criminal convictions while they fight legal efforts to remove them from the country.
It's a distressing, distressing debate. Basically, you could be charged with something here, serve your time, get out, and then you're labeled a criminal, so be slated for deportation and then held again for longer even than the original term that you already served. It just seems so wrong, at least to four members of the four justices of the court. The federal courts have ruled that we got to have a rule. It's a mess right now. Let's have a rule on this. And even that is in dispute. I don't think this is going to get solved with the current court. I think they'll probably wait until the Trump justice comes on.
And when that happens, you know what will happen.
Yeah, exactly. It is not a good time to be an undocumented worker in this country.
So this is another good example, right, Rosemary, of Trump taking something that may be wrong but politically popular, to do. I know what people are going to be saying. They're going to be saying, "Well, why did they commit a crime?" You know, it goes far beyond that, of course. But that's what they will say, and Trump will not feel that he's lost anything from going in that direction.
Yeah. Even the case, the name on the case, is a young man who was carried here as a child by his parents. And his crimes were, I don't mean to belittle it, but they're not horrible crimes. He was joyriding and he was using drugs. So he serves the time and he comes out. And for that now, he's subject to deportation to a place he's never lived. He moved here as an infant. And he can be held in jail for endless amounts of time until they decide whether or not to send him there. And the argument on the other side is, well, they're not Americans, so why should they have the rights of, Americans to protection? It's so ungenerous.
That's one argument.
It's so un-American. Oh, my goodness.
That's one argument. The other argument, which I just articulated, I think, is, well, he shouldn't have done the crime.
Yeah, I suspect that there are a lot of people who are not your prototypical Trump supporters who will, without question, support the more radical view here. I think there are a lot of people who are torn by this, who will see all of the reasons why it's problematic, but still will say to themselves, they're here illegally, they committed a crime, they don't belong here. And that may not be fair, but I think it's a broader issue than just the alt-right kind of people saying.
Well, that is the simplification. The truth is the American justice system can handle that.
Yeah.
You have in place a rule that says, okay, if you're a flight risk, if you let this guy out of jail, he's going to fly and then we'll never get him, you hold him. If the crime is awful, more serious than, say, joyriding or simple drugs, you hold him. So you don't have to pick all of one or all of the other. You put into place a system like the one we have that the lower courts have already said we could enforce, where you handle this in a measured, discreet way.
Well, of course, I'm sorry, Joe, but the specifics, which are when you were joyriding, did you run somebody over? I don't know.
Right. Yeah. He didn't in this case, but you're right. That would be a case where, okay, if there's a death in it, we got to look at it a different way.
All right, we have to catch up. We're desperately late for news and all that other stuff, so we don't want to get in trouble, so we'll be right back after this. Good morning. Welcome back to the roundtable and to our panel discussion this morning. Alan Chartok, Rosemary Armeo, and Ira Fussfeld join us this morning. We welcome your letters, roundtable at WAMC.org. Roundtable at WAMC. No, I'm sorry. It's panel at WAMC.org. Too much on autopilot. Panel at WAMC.org. And Alan's collating now, and we'll go to our letters.
Well, yes, we will. How can a regular person help to ensure good investigative journalism prevails? I feel like new methods need to be taught to deal with this presidency. I've already subscribed to local papers and contributed to WAMC. Penelope. Good.
Yeah, this is, boy, great question. We're struggling with it at the journalism school. We're struggling with it in the international investigative reporting places that I work for. We were just talking about this on the break when Trump came and did a meeting with the editorial board at the New York Times. A transcript was available of it. If you read it, you will see that he comes off as much less well than he does in the writing about it, because you accord people, especially the presidency, a certain respect, and you give them the benefit of the doubt. You don't highlight their every error. And I'm not sure that you can treat someone like Trump, who I believe I'm not diagnosing, but I think he has a narcissistic personality traits, and he sees that as weakness. Oh, I got over on him. And he just gets worse rather than better. We have to hold him to account somehow. And I think the press has really begun to do that. And yet when we do that, we look prejudiced. We look like we're going after him. It's very difficult wall to walk across.
But I think, I'm sorry, Alan. I just think that the press has to do it.
Yeah.
And it because they can't be afraid of losing readers.
Right.
They can't be afraid of the reputation. The reputation is going to be worse if they don't perform good quality journalism and investigative work. And if they don't succeed financially, and they wither away, well, damn, they'll have gone down with a fight.
Yeah, it's not worth surviving if it comes at the cost of being
right.
slavish, being servants to propaganda, which is what Trump serves up every day. Let me say that again. I don't want to read about his tweets. I don't want to read about his little reality game picking his cabinet. We ought to be talking about Carrier, and I know we're going to later. That's a smokescreen again, and we can't keep falling for it. He's out campaigning in Ohio right now saying, see how great I am? Look what I did in Carrier. It's a flim-flam.
It's fascinating. I mean, just fascinating stuff. I mean, I don't know what a newspaper does. I was thinking as Ira was talking, and I was going to ask both of you this. You know, there's sometimes you see somebody sends something to a newspaper, and it's illiterate, and they have parentheses sick, meaning this idiot.
This is
said
what he's
it.
Actually said, right? Right.
Said, you know, but then is there an obligation to make the guy look better? Would you put a sick after, as I see, after something he uttered that was nonsense?
Are you talking about a quote or a letter to the editor?
I'm talking about either.
Oh, because letters to the editor are typically edited for style.
By the newspaper.
The newspaper believes that it is something that it is publishing, and it has an obligation to its readers to print correct grammar and correct spelling. So it will edit those kinds of things. But that's always been a discussion. If I know I'm guilty of using the word gunna, G-O-N-N-A,
yeah,
instead of going. And if a politician says gonna, do you write in your story going or gonna?
Well, I think you do, Ira. I think
which,
if a guy,
you do which?
I think if somebody's an idiot,
yeah,
you or illiterate, and that's what you're dealing with, I think you, oh boy, am I going to get into trouble on this.
You know, one example can I give? It's not, he wasn't an idiot, but Ted Kennedy was asked at one point when he was running for president the very simple and predictable question, why do you want to be president? And he stumbled. He just rambled. He did not have
the famous
the
Roger
soundbite.
Mudd interview.
Yes, exactly. And he never recovered from that. And up until then,
well, there was the little thing with the swim in the bay.
Sure.
Well, by the way, look at the clip of Tim Ryan, the guy who lost to Nancy Pelosi, was asked yesterday about, he was asked a question, something like, is Nancy Pelosi the future of the party? And he was stumped. He didn't have an answer.
So my point was a little bit lost. It's like, that's not unusual. I mean, I'm talking on the radio and stumbling and things, too. That doesn't mean I'm an idiot. It means it's difficult to speak in full sentences. So the press kind of protected Kennedy. And there he was on his own, and it was exposed. Eisenhower, oh my gosh, if you look at the transcripts of him speaking, he comes off as an idiot. Clearly was not. So the press has traditionally cleaned up quotes and protected people. So it's really unfair not to do that to Trump, except that he takes advantage of it.
But wait a second. You see, I don't like this business that you guys are talking about, which is that if some person who is not able to handle the American the English language, gets away with it because you guys clean him up. I think if somebody is writing a letter and it is mean and facetious and illiterate, that you should publish it the way that it came in so that people can see that.
It's awfully hard being on the radio. I know as often as I'm on, I'm not often as you folks are, and I know that I can't always find the right word. I was on a few weeks ago and used the word despicable, and my wife was criticizing me. You shouldn't have used despicable. It should have been a different word. But when you're on the air in front of those live microphones,
sure.
I love the fact that I was a writer because I could edit myself better
exactly.
than I can.
Well,
okay, but about editing, so you have Donald Trump, who is now basically taking to Twitter. So we there's no editing there. It is as he says it. We see the language you were talking about visually a moment ago.
Yeah, it's hard to say.
We sort of know all of these things, don't we? I mean, and he's there is no filter between him. I mean, he apparently what we've been told is that he screams them out to somebody and then they tweet them out.
Has said that he has done that. He himself said that, but in the middle of the
night,
there
are two different
phones,
and I believe if you see that it was sent on an Android, it's him.
I'm losing my train of thought here.
Well, we were talking about carrier.
On a different
thing. We didn't get there.
Yeah.
No, we have letters.
Okay. So, dear panel, as Upton Sinclair said, it is difficult to get a man to understand something when his salary depends upon his not understanding it. On point. I think that's on point for what we've been talking about.
Yeah, absolutely.
Andrew says, I know a lot of people that voted for Trump who truly believe that he's never lied. They also believe that Hillary Clinton told only lies, and that's from upstate New York. Okay. And then we got a letter, a note here. From somebody who says, puzzled about the federal transition, watch the World Wrestling Foundation, WWF, on television. It has a sleight of hand, scripted emotional manipulation, and choreographed violence. Yep. It's all theater. Seriously, a model for the operation of the new administration, especially since the World Federal Wrestling Foundation now has skin in the game, right?
Yeah, well, it's actually the WWE. It used to be a federation. They changed it to Worldwide Entertainment. But Linda McMahon,
who lost for governor
in Connecticut, or is it senator? But at any rate, she is reportedly in line for a cabinet position.
Yeah, small business.
And Trump has been on the wrestling show, getting into a fight with the patriarch Vince McMahon.
Yeah, I mean, look at his
network
appeal.
All over
look at
again.
Look at Trump's appeal. It's sort of the same audience.
That's right.
Wrestling and
Good morning, panel. So let me get this straight. Let me get this straight. A partially clothed Al Gore gets into a tube. It says tube of bubbling lukewarm water
tub.
On a late night sketch comedy show and can't run for president. But Trump talks about sexually assaulting women on a bus and becomes president. These aren't even the same ballpark. That's the Cody from Greenfield.
Well, yeah. I think we have made the case many times here that he has broken every rule. But I think going back to Gore, it was a sign to many that it was an unpresidential thing to do.
But if he did it tomorrow, it wouldn't be the same.
No, you wouldn't care. No. Yeah. Maybe.
You've got Obama slow, what do they call it, slow talking the news.
Yeah, slow jamming the news.
Brucey writes, Paul Krugman has a reality check for those who voted for the dealmaker. Another metric, Trump would have to do one carrier-sized deal a week for 30 years to save as many jobs as Obama's auto bailout.
Yeah, Josh Jarnes made that point at
That's
the press conference
point.
Yesterday.
That's
yeah.
a great point.
And
carrier. We have to talk about that a minute.
Sure.
Will you? I am disturbed. I used to cover, you know, the local job boards and these organizations set up to retain and create new jobs. And I always wondered, what is the price of a job? So what did we pay? We meaning U.S. government or U.S. taxpayers to keep those 1,000 or maybe it's only 600 jobs.
State government, correct?
Well,
it's a state government, but they are also the parent company of Carrier.
Right.
United Technologies?
Yes.
UT,
defense contractor.
The big defense contractor, and reportedly they got assurances that they were going to continue to get big contracts.
Right. And so what did we actually pay? I heard the number $700,000.
$700,000 is the number.
Which means even if Trump saved the full 1,000 jobs he's claiming, that's $70,000 a job. And it's an incentive. Bernie Sanders is tweeting about this right now. Trump campaigned on, I'm going to force them. I'm going to put a tax on them. I'm going to put tariffs on their stuff so they can't bring what they build elsewhere back into the country. He didn't do anything against Carrier. He gave to the businessmen who run it.
Well, he would argue
he's helped them.
He would argue it's the art of the deal. He wants those jobs to be saved, so he made a deal to keep them here.
As Kennedy did with the steel guys. Yeah.
Is it worth it? Are those jobs, we don't even know what they are. We don't even know if they're the top jobs in Kerry. They might be like really crummy jobs.
It was 1,000 out of 2,100, and as the Wall Street Journal reports, that it is a drop in the bucket when you compare to the job loss in the entire state.
Right, but to Rosemary's point, these are jobs that supposedly pay $21 an hour here, and Carrier was going to move them to Mexico where it would be $3 an hour.
Right.
So that's the.
So he's they're paying him. They are giving Carrier a break,
yes.
Which is not the same as forcing them to be patriotic right. And do what they do in their communities.
I'm sorry, but I used to be involved with economic development committees,
right.
And that's that kind of incentive is done all the time,
right. Including with the automobile manufacturers,
right.
Which Obama gets a lot of credit for.
Well, it surely is going to be done all the time here now, because after this deal, what company would not say, hey, you know, we can go to Mexico,
Nigeria,
give us money.
Is doing it in New York State.
Thing,
yeah.
You know, you come to work at a SUNY, bring your business to a SUNY, and we will. You don't pay taxes for 10 years,
right?
I mean, that
it used to drive the local. I mean, you'd bring a business into Ulster County essentially tax-free, and the other businesses that were already here were looking around and saying, why are we paying taxes?
Yeah. Christy says, apologies, you already discussed this, but I'm curious of your thoughts about the flag issue at Hampshire College. My thoughts, don't people in power have other things to worry about? Well, not if you're Donald Trump. The idea of burning an American flag is something he finds, I'm sure, as a winner. And I'm not going to allow that. I'm not going to allow that to happen. And a lot of Americans agree with him.
I don't get that. What are you not going to allow to happen?
Well, Donald Trump is saying, I don't want flags burned in this country. American.
Oh, he
flags.
Said worse than that.
Yeah.
He said, if you do it, I should strip away your citizenship.
And
it's ridiculous.
Of course.
I love my country, but
this is
hearing him say that makes me want to burn a flag.
Isn't this a different issue?
I'm not sure.
In the wake of Trump's comments, there are now protests growing around the country where people are burning the American flag.
I get that.
Yeah, and at Hampshire College,
I thought they removed the flag.
They removed
they
the
did.
Flag, and then last night on O'Reilly, Jesse Waters, his intrepid ambush guy,
a stinker,
went to the house of the president of the college and tried to find out why. And
put
of course,
his foot in the door.
He literally put his foot in the guy's door as he was getting out of his car and succeeded only, depending on your point of view, of embarrassing himself or embarrassing the president.
Well,
neither of them came out looking very, very good.
Ira, as much as I'd like to agree with you, and I hope he did embarrass himself, I think Trump, as a very clever fellow that he is, knows what the odds are.
Oh, I agree with you. Yeah. It's a plays well. And the Carrier deal plays. If this Carrier deal cost more than it's worth, it literally in dollars and cents, it's priceless for Trump to be able to say he succeeded in this big campaign to save these jobs.
Okay, and billionaires, says James. Billionaires, billionaires. Where are the Robespierres?
Did you read that one? Oh.
No, I read it to you before.
Oh, and David Axelrod this morning tweeted that Trump's cabinet selections show great diversity. He is mixing billionaires with multimillionaires.
Oh, God. And this one I think I did read already. Okay, and of course, Rosemary, you've talked about this so many times, but maybe one more time. Should the press report or otherwise take notice of Trump's tweets? How do you not?
Well, you got to read them, but we really have to find a way not to spend all this time talking about them.
And who does? But who does the talking about them?
It's all over cable TV. It's the cable.
There is a story in the New York Times, and it's on page B14, and you, it should be reported. But the tweets are like modern day press releases, and like all press releases, you get a stack of them, and some of them you report, and some of them you throw out, and that's what these tweets should be.
But as an editor publisher, Ira, certainly, and Rosemary, you certainly both know, intuition wise. What will make people pick up the paper and say, "Golly gee whiz, Martha"?
Trump is the master at that. That's what he's doing. He's handing that to you.
I mean, if those tweets were boring, then we wouldn't care.
Well, there's that.
But they're not boring.
He's tweeted 88 times since the election, not counting this morning if he's tweeted today.
So, I mean, I think my goal, and we spend a lot of time here talking about, mm-hmm. you know, the little sensational parade on who's going to be in the cabinet and his tweets. It would be good if every day we could find one thing he's not highlighting that we ought to be highlighting and talk about that for a few minutes.
You took a look at Eisenhower's cabinet. So that's one of the advantages of being a little older. Mm. If you took a look at Eisenhower's cabinet.
Who?
Nobody knew who these guys were. You know, and now here comes Trump, who says, I'm going to bring this parade before the cameras, and I'm going to get people involved in it, and it has a certain brilliance to it.
He is a media master, there's no question, mm-hmm. and in a bad, bad way. He is using it for the forces of darkness.
So, yes, but Rosemary, what's the antidote?
Well, we don't have it yet. Alan, like I say, we're struggling to figure it out. You call him out. You don't just say
That's right.
He says flag burning is should result in loss of citizenship. You don't say that. You go in the face of all kinds of Supreme Court and
they
other
do
rulings.
That, but they do that.
Not really, Alan.
Well, this is also
the articles I've been reading absolutely do it. They say
you are not a normal news consumer. You are an exceptional
news consumer.
Well, there you
go. Now you have an issue.
Yeah, we're a self-absorbed media elite.
But also, there's this idea that from everything that we've heard in articles that I've read on this, that the people who have been around him for a long time said this is not a guy who enjoys calm. He loves chaos. He loves to throw things out and to see the conflict and to see what arises. So I don't know that if we can ever expect a time where we're going to figure this out, because that's what he's doing. He wants to keep the plate spinning and look in many, many different directions.
And when things start to get boring. Sorry.
No, go ahead.
Well, I was going to say, I have some empathy with this. You know, I've learned that if you throw out a bomb like this and there's a whole bunch of hubbub around it, and don't forget people voted for him because they did want some chaos in the system, shake it up. You don't have to do the hard work and the hard things. And Trump, as president, has many, many hard things again on his plate. And now he's not paying attention to them. Until he has people in place, they will take over the hard work, I think.
We'll end there this morning. Thanks to Alan and Rosemary and Ira. Appreciate you being here. We'll be back with another edition of the panel tomorrow morning.